If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking. On November 5th, voters will decide whether to raise Missouri's minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2026 and require sick time for workers. While similar measures have made it past the finish line in the past, Missouri Chamber of Commerce's Kara Korchas is hoping that voters reject Proposition A at the ballot. Korchas joins us on the latest episode of Politically Speaking to talk about why her organization doesn't support a minimum wage increase and whether her group will push the legislature to change the measure if it finds voter approval. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
My promise to St. Louis was that I would do the absolute most for each and every person, starting with those who have the very least.
What I wanted to do was look and see what other states are doing.
We have to be willing to change those laws, that they are balanced and they affect everybody equally.
As somebody that grew up in the St. Louis area, in North St. Louis County, I didn't know any lawyers growing up.
We got to find long-term solutions to make government better, but also to be able to provide services to people.
I don't want to leave that federal money that we've been leaving all these years on the table.
We need to be spending this money to take care of Missourians.
I thought we accomplished a lot this year, but a lot more needs to be done.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. Joining us today from, I assume, beautiful mid-Missouri.
Correct.
She is currently the head of the Missouri Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, hi, Jason. I'm Kara Korchas. I'm interim president and CEO, as well as senior vice president of governmental affairs. Yes, that is a mouthful, at the Missouri Chamber of Commerce and Industry. And indeed, you are correct. I'm sitting today in sunny Jefferson City.
Now, we're going to be talking about Proposition A, which would raise the state's minimum wage and institute required sick time. But before we do that, tell us a little bit about yourself and your organization for people who may not be familiar with the Missouri Chamber of Commerce.
Absolutely. So first I'll start with the chamber and what it is. So the Missouri Chamber of Commerce and Industry, we've been around for now 101 years. We celebrated our 100th anniversary last year. We are the voice of business. We represent businesses of all industries across all regions of our state, from your smallest mom and pop shop to larger organizations. Our primary role is to be the voice of business in the Capitol, as well as, we do a lot of other really cool things, Jason. We have a foundation where we do policy research out of. We also, through this same foundation, have an apprenticeship grant program for employers to expand apprenticeships across the state. We also are involved with a small business insurance plan to help businesses offer insurance to their employees. So we do a lot of things at the chamber that we are proud of, but I think most of your listeners probably know us from being that voice of business in the Capitol. We testify on a lot of bills. We actually testified last session 167 times. We have members across all industries, so we track issues in energy policy, healthcare, manufacturing, to legal climate issues. We cover it all, and so that's why you see our team day in and day out walking the halls of the Capitol in Jefferson City.
And can you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you joined the Chamber of Commerce, and how you got to this position that, as you mentioned, is a very long position at this point as far as title goes?
Yes, long title. Yes, so I am going on 5.5 years at the Chamber, will be there 6 years in February. I have been on the governmental affairs team throughout this time. So we have a team of 3 full-time lobbyists, again, who walk the halls of the Capitol. And then we also have a political arm that I have managed. So that's how we get involved in elections, to help elect pro-business candidates. And then sometimes we help defeat anti-business candidates as well. We have a PAC where we do that, Political Action Committee, as well as our Missouri Chamber Political Institute, which is our voter education arm. I took a little bit different route than some. I actually lobbied in another state before being relocated to the beautiful state of Missouri, which I am proud to call home. Again, I was one of those trailing spouses. My spouse got relocated to Missouri, and it just worked out that I was able to start at the Missouri Chamber after lobbying for over 10 years in another state. And I also, like many in the governmental affairs profession, spent a few years out in DC working on Capitol Hill and for another national association. I have been now the interim president and CEO since July. And so this is a fairly new role, but again, I'm not a new face at the Missouri Chamber, and I couldn't be prouder to be here. I think we have the best members you could ever dream of, and I am so proud to represent them, Jason.
So let's talk about Proposition A. I was not surprised that the Missouri Chamber of Commerce opposed this, because I have followed other minimum wage increases in 2006 and 2018, and the chamber opposed those two. So before we get into kind of the political machinations of this measure, why did the chamber decide to make it 3 in a row in terms of opposing minimum wage increases at the ballot?
So I would say throughout, you know, decades, our philosophy has really been driven on the principle of let business decide. In a free enterprise system, we strongly believe that the bedrock of such free enterprise is allowing business owners to make their own decisions on how to run their workplaces. You know, so we really view this, Jason, as a classic let business decide type of issue. This is creating a mandate for businesses of all sizes across the state. And we really don't think businesses should have a one-size-fits-all approach. We believe business owners know how to set their wages and benefit packages best to help them stay competitive. And so we really believe that government should stay out of the way and let business owners make their own decisions.
I mean, does the Missouri Chamber of Commerce not believe there should be a minimum wage at all? Or do you just don't think it should be higher than the federal minimum wage, which I think hasn't been changed in a pretty long time, if I'm not mistaken?
So our minimum wage in Missouri actually has been higher than the federal minimum wage since 2013. And I want to be also very careful of how I'm talking about this. You know, of course, we believe that businesses should pay competitive wages and offer competitive benefits. But again, we just don't think they should be under a mandate. That should be their practice to offer whatever they think is reasonable and that works for their employees. And as sure as you talk to voters from all over the state, you know, what works best in the Boot Hill may not work best on the West End. So we think businesses should be have some level of flexibility. And, you know, beyond this, Jason, I think a lot of the headlines on this ballot measure is minimum wage. There's much more embedded in this 9-page document and a lot of other provisions that we have serious concerns with, related to paid sick leave, as well as related to enhancing the opportunity for businesses to get sued out of existence, which is always a concern of ours.
And we'll get to the sick leave part in a minute, but I do want to talk about the minimum wage part. So this would raise the minimum wage to $13.75 an hour on January 1st, 2025, then would go to $15 an hour in 2026, and then would be adjusted by inflation after that. Now, I'll say what I've said, I think, on the previous show and other shows. if this had been a proposal in 2010 or 2012, I would definitely understand why a lot of people would be opposed to this, because that would seem like a very high minimum wage. But post-COVID, those wage numbers seem pretty standard. And I've heard anecdotes about how, like, even fast food restaurants are offering higher than $15 an hour because the labor market is so competitive. So can you address that point? Because I think a lot of voters are going to see that and think, have a pretty similar reaction to me, that like, oh, that seems pretty reasonable to me because inflation is so high right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, when voters will be looking at this on the November 5th ballot, you know, and you're talking about it's going to increase eventually to $15 an hour. Well, actually, they're voting for something that is never going to stop increasing with the consumer price index provision that is in it. And that just means every year, you know, consumer price index looks at inflation, but it's not just looking at inflation in Missouri. It's looking at inflation also in California and New York, which have significantly higher cost of living. So this isn't just a Missouri inflation matter. We could be paying more based on California wages. And absolutely, the majority probably of looking at in 2023, Missouri's average hourly wage for private businesses, and this comes from state publicly available data, was $29.67. So yes, are many employers paying more than this? Correct. We just don't think that everyone should be mandated to do that. And I do want to add that the vast majority of minimum wage earners in our nation are actually high schoolers. And so this could have the unintended consequence of driving those young adults out of the job market, which I think as a state, we want to encourage young adults also to have these types of jobs that teach them great, we call them soft skills, but we should call them critically important skills. Things like showing up for work on time, how to work in a team well, you know, those collaborative type of professional skills that we want young adults to have so they're ultimately successful in their careers.
You probably heard Heather McGee advocate for the pro Proposition A side, saying that, yes, there are probably a lot of workers who are in high school who get below $13.75 or $15 an hour, but there's also a lot of people who have families or who are in college who have that wage structure too. I mean, you heard that probably from listening to that. What's your response to that line of argumentation?
Yeah, I would say that we are in an incredibly tight labor market. So if somebody is working in a job where maybe they aren't happy with their wages, trust me, you and I both see it. You drive down a street, it says, you know, workers needed, we're going to pay you X amount of hours, and we're going to give you a signing bonus. So I would say in our free market system, kind of the market dictates pay. And if a company is paying adequately, there will be many other places where that worker could probably go and make more money.
Well, let's move to the sick time part of this. It would basically require employers to provide 1 hour of paid sick time for every 30 hours worked. And if you listen to my interview with Heather McGee, my reaction to this was, I assume a lot of businesses already offer paid sick time, so this doesn't seem as egregious to businesses as if they were, as if this initiative required paid family leave time, which a lot of businesses do not offer because it's expensive and there has to be a way to pay for it. Again, I want you to kind of react to my reaction there. What would you say to people who see that and are like, a lot of businesses already have this, what's the big deal about requiring this through the proposition?
Well, I think in kind of delineating my concerns, I should say two things can be true. Yes, of course, many businesses already offer paid sick leave. In fact, the Missouri Chamber, we offer paid sick leave to our employees. Businesses understand the value of a healthy workforce and what that does to productivity. But in the details of this measure, Jason, there are a lot of concerns, a lot of conflicting guidelines that could put businesses in a struggle of how do they interpret this new paid sick leave versus federal FMLA, which is leave that is mandated by the federal government. There's questions of if you already offer FMLA to employees, does this new paid sick leave requirement run on top of that federal leave, or is it in addition to? It's also very confusing. Again, 9 pages, so clearly it's not going to be super black and white. There's a lot of gray areas when you have that much language. Is looking at a small business. It says, if you are a small business having anywhere between 1 to 15 employees, you have to offer 1 hour of paid sick leave per every 30 hours worked by that employee. Well, when do you get counted as having 15 employees? It says in this measure, it could count temporary employees even, which is not the usual in terms of, you know, various incentive programs or tax structures. You're not usually counting necessarily temporary employees. Is it that you hit 15 employees at some point during the year? Is it at the end of the year? Is it that you start the year with 15 employees? There's just a lot of gray area. And in conjunction with that, there is a measure related to legal challenges. So if an employer is deemed as not necessarily compliant with this, which a small business owner, they have a lot on their shoulders and not very much time to be able to read a 9-page document and get legal advice on how to do that. If they are not compliant, they could get a Class C misdemeanor. And that's a big problem. We don't want to be making a small business owner who is really the backbone of our economy, their life any harder. We should be a state that is making the clear proclamation that we are open and friendly to business.
Is there also a concern about the Department of Labor Industrial Relations providing enforcement to this? Or is that pretty common with current labor and minimum wage laws? Like I see that as another part of this initiative, but is there any concerns about that aspect from your organization?
I mean, Department of Labor does regulate, various laws and regulation on the books that deal with employment. However, I don't think Missouri voters generally love giving the government more power to look into their businesses or their home lives. So, I do think that is something that voters should be aware of. We are giving the government more power over businesses, small and large, which is a concern of ours.
Okay, so let's talk about the political campaigning aspect of this. And I'm just sorry to sound like a broken record, but I'm just going to repeat what I've been saying. Like, the other two minimum wage increase ballot measures that I talk about all the time in 06 and 2018 passed overwhelmingly. And it's not because there was no opposition. There just was not particularly robust spending by opponents on an opposition campaign. Does the Missouri Chamber of Commerce plan to actually spend money to try to defeat this? Or is it just going to do what it did in 2018 and 2006, talk about how they have problems with it, but not actually try to organize a campaign to defeat it?
Well, I should say that, we have a variety of interests always in an election, right? So we don't have endless resources. And trust me, Jason, I would love if money grew on trees here and we had endless amount of resources to engage in all these elections significantly. We are looking at how we can cost effectively engage. We know, we are up against a huge amount of money. I think the last kind of political finance analysis we did on the support of Proposition A movement, it's over $4 million. That's a lot of money. What we are doing is trying to use our resources wisely to educate members, educate voters, and also collaborate with other like-minded groups who, we can align with and hopefully magnify our message by working together.
The other thing that is different from other ballot initiatives with minimum wage increases is they've always been statutory changes, We've been talking a lot on this show about constitutional amendments and whether we should change the threshold for constitutional amendments. But statutory changes are very different. Like, first of all, you need fewer signatures to get on the ballot, and legislators can make changes to statutory initiatives. Now, there have not been successful efforts to change the minimum wage propositions that passed in 2006 and 2018. There was certainly talk in 2006 afterwards about making changes to the inflation escalator, but those never came to pass. Is it possible that the legislature could make changes on some of the things you have concerns about, especially the paid sick time language? Because, okay, let me just ask you that first. Will your organization be pushing the legislature to make changes to this if it ends up passing?
I think, Jason, we would evaluate that if it passes, and that's something that we would cross that bridge if we got to it. I think our main focus is up to November 5th, and then that will be an inflection point. You know, our hope is that this doesn't pass, but if it does pass, I absolutely think we would explore all options, especially like you said, this is a statutory change. This can be modified under the Capitol Dome if we could get enough legislative support for it. And that would take, you know, education of our elected officials. But that is something that we will be evaluating essentially November 6th.
The reason I ask that is I am well aware of how politically tricky it is for legislators to change statutory initiatives. Like, I remember very fondly in 2011 how the overhaul of the dog breeding initiative brought like hundreds of people to the Capitol, both pro and con. But like some of the changes you mentioned about like the paid sick leave part, I could see a scenario where maybe you make changes to that to make it more clear. And I could see that not being as controversial as, say, just repealing the whole thing. What's kind of your thought about that? Because I could see those concerns you brought up are not illegitimate concerns, and I could see those being perhaps rectified by the legislature if you have to get to that point.
No, I think you're absolutely correct that, you know, modifying pieces of this may be, you know, a little bit more acceptable by some legislative perspective. You know, however, and I think you saw this this past legislative session, nothing is ever easy to get passed and across the finish line. So if things were so easy, trust me, we'd have all of our legislative priorities passed every year. And we hope that they do, and we work hard to get them there. But there are some things, some mitigating factors that prevent bills from crossing the finish line every year.
You are certainly correct about that. And you are probably understating how challenging it is for a bill to become a law in Missouri. Before I let you go, has the chamber taken positions on any of the other ballot initiatives? You're shaking your head, so that's no. Our listeners cannot see this because this is an audio podcast, but you're only focused on Proposition A. Is that fair to say at this point?
Correct. Proposition A is our focus, I would say, along with the governor's race. We came out early and endorsed Mike Kehoe for governor and are going to continue to back him for the general election, as well as some other candidates in key races. But no, we are not engaging on any of the other ballot measures or initiative petitions. Those seem to get the most amount of airtime, while this has kind of flown under the radar from what we've seen. But we're hoping that as we get closer to the election, more voters will learn about this issue as we educate them and hopefully vote no on it on November 5th.
Well, thank you so much for coming and providing the opposition side to Proposition A. If you want to hear the proponents talk about Proposition A, make sure to go to Politically Speaking either on Apple Podcasts or stlpr.org and make sure you are well informed on November 5th. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri system. And how could people find out more about the Missouri Chamber of Commerce on the World Wide Web.
Absolutely. So we are on all social media channels. We have a very active YouTube page as well. You can visit us at our website, which is MO Chamber, and that is mochamber.com. And we do a lot, Jason, so we'd love for people to visit and see what we do. And hopefully every day I go to work trying to make Missouri the best state in the nation to do business.
Well, thank you very much for your work, and thank you very much for coming on. And until next time, so long. Politically Speaking is produced by Sarah Kellogg, Rachel Lipman, and me, Jason Rosenbaum. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts. From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.